folks. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of That Record Got Me. Hi, I'm your host, Rob Elba. Hey, guess what? This may be our first truly hardcore episode. We've skated around with episodes before. We did an Angry Samoans episode once, but this just might be our first truly hardcore episode. My guest today is author Bob Surin. His latest book is called Weird Music That Goes On Forever, A Punk's Guide to Loving Jazz, and it's a really awesome book. And it was great talking to Bob, and we realized that we actually have a lot of friends in common, and we know a lot of different people, because Bob did come up in South Florida, or maybe more like Central Florida, in the 80s. His book can be found on microcosmpublishing.com, as well as his previous book, Crate Digger, An Obsession with Punk Records. So I guess he was the right guy to bring this record. I asked him, and right away I said, hey, you want to come on the show, and what do you want to do? And without hesitation, he said, 7 Seconds, Skins, Brains, and Guts. I, of course, know about 7 Seconds. I did not know about this. I had probably passed hardcore into other stuff. But it was really great talking to Bob, and it was really great going over, you know, what hardcore meant to kids, especially younger kids, teenage kids, and how it sort of changed their lives for, you know, for good or maybe for worse. But in Bob's case, I would say definitely for good, definitely changed the trajectory of his life. And we had a great conversation, so without further ado, here's my conversation with Bob Surin.
What bands were you in Miami?
Holy Terrors. I was in a band called the Holy Terrors. And I was thinking, I know we know, and I was in a band called the X-Cons in the 80s, like that. And we did
have the X-Cons.
Yeah, that figures. That's the band you remember.
Okay. I didn't know. Wow, I always wondered who the X-Cons were. You were on the same label as the Misfits, the M-Y-S-F-I-T-Z, the Misfits.
Yes.
Do you remember that band?
Oh, yeah, I do.
She's a teaser.
Yes.
Real catchy song.
That's it.
Yeah. And the X-Cons had that great song, She's My Hose Bag, that sounds like the theme song from an 80s sitcom.
She's my girl.
Yeah, yeah, it's funny. Yeah, I mean, we called ourselves punks, but we were more like a power pop type band.
Yeah, that record, I got that record for $1 somewhere.
Nice.
In Jupiter, and I loved it, and then I noticed one day that Tim Yohannan had it on his want list, and for years, Tim at Maximum Rock and Roll tried to get that record off me, and I never gave it up. I don't think Tim ever conquered that one.
That's great. Yeah, yeah. So I know at some point it ended up like our song "Do Dead People Tan" ended up on some Power Pearls, like a German Power Pearls thing or something.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I was thinking we must know like Jeff Hodapp from Roach Motel. You know Jeff Hodapp.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. I know Jeff.
And Milo from Gay Cowboys in Bondage, and we, you know, obviously right. we have people in common. But
yeah.
You, when you were in Florida, you were more. Central Florida, were you? Or?
I was in Stuart. I was in Stuart, Florida, up in Martin County.
Right.
I was in Martin County, but I am 55, so I missed a lot of that X-Cons in the Eat and the Misfits era of Florida punk.
Right.
And I started, first show I ever went to was in 85, and Roach Motel was supposed to play it, and they canceled. So I didn't get to see Roach Motel until I did a reunion show for them in 2003.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking that. It's funny. Isn't it amazing how not much, you're not that much, you're younger than me, like 5 years younger, but that back then, that made a big a difference. And then, yeah, we're definitely going to talk about that because, yeah, it was just a big difference in when we first got into, you know, into punk music and alternative music. And, you know, we just have different perspectives, which goes, you know, which goes to your book you wrote, which first of all, obviously we're going to talk about your newest book, Weird Music. Bob Surin has a book out now. It's called Weird Music That Goes On Forever, A Punk's Guide to Loving Jazz. And I just want to say this, in a way, this book was written for someone just like me, because Bob, I don't think you know, you have no way of knowing this, but I just sort of, a lot of people that know me know that my thing is that I've always just said, I just don't get jazz. I can't get jazz. I just don't get it. You know, and as I get older, I know a lot of my friends eventually got older and got into it, but I never did. And people would always try and get me into it. So it almost feels like you wrote this book for me, for someone, or at least someone like me.
I kind of wrote it for me.
Okay.
Because I learned so much writing this book, doing the research. I mean, it was music that I have picked up on over the years, but I didn't know anything about the people. And when I dug into the book, I knew a little bit about a couple of them. I'd read a few books, but doing the book, man, I dug deep. I was finding documentaries online. I was finding old interviews. And a real wealth of information was obituaries. I read a lot of obituaries writing this book, and obituaries were so rich with detail, and they led me down other sidetracks, which led to more information. So I learned so much writing this book, but I'm glad that it's going to be useful for a lot of other people approximately our age, too. I've almost all the books that I've given away or sold have been to people in their 40s and 50s.
Right. Yeah. And I know I have friends of mine, people that I'm friends with that have gotten this book and really love it. Are you kind of surprised that you're really getting, I feel like you're getting a really good response to it. Are you kind of surprised by that?
Yeah, we didn't know what the response would be. When I pitched it to Microcosm very late one night, the editor got the owner of Microcosm, Joe, got back to me and goes, "Oh, I'm not so sure. It might be kind of a cool idea. Why don't you make it 36 pages and we'll put it out as a magazine?" Right. And I said, "I don't think I can do the entire history of jazz any credit in 36 pages. I'm just going to write it the way I think it should be written, and I'll let you know when it's done." He said, you do whatever you want.
Right.
So that's what I did. When I thought it was done, I turned it in. And then the editor there requested a little bit more content. And I went back to the research, and I was surprised when it ended up being 256 pages when they originally asked me for 36.
Right.
When
right.
I was writing it, I thought, this is going to be like 120 pages. And then they laid it all out. They're like, it's 256 pages. I had no idea.
Right.
Blew
right.
me away. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And obviously, so you had a relationship with Microcosm because the book Crate Digger, that's like 10 years old now, right?
It's 9. It came out in 2015.
All right. Yep. 9 years old. So yeah, Crate Digger and obsession with punk records. First of all, off the bat, I just want to tell you one thing that I'm so impressed by, because you basically, that book came about, you just started writing things on Facebook, right? You were writing about records and you wrote, and then people were telling you, man, this is really good. You're a good writer. You should write a book. But it's so funny because that happens all the time, like every day. People always write shit on Facebook and then other people say, you should write a book. You should write a book. And no one ever does. So just mad props for you that you actually did that. You actually wrote
what happened is, yeah, I was just writing. I was separated at the time. I was getting ready to get divorced and I had a lot of time on my hands and I had to express myself in some way. So I found myself turning to the computer very often and remembering some stories from when I first got into punk and remembering how I stumbled across certain bands and some bands that I saw live. And I had all these stories that I used to tell to kids over the years. And people for years were always saying, you need to write a book. You need to write a book. And I was posting these stories just randomly, all out of order on Facebook. And people kept saying, you got to write a book. You got to write a book. And I just kind of blew it off. And then a guy who is a college English professor messaged me, goes, here's how you write a book. Just save all those Facebook posts and put them in alphabetical order like it's a record collection.
Oh.
And I went, oh, okay, I can do that. And then I just made a list of all the records I wanted to put in the book. And then I just went down the list every day and I wrote a chapter or two every day and it was done in a few months.
That's great. And yeah, and that's kind of the genius of that book, or that's part of it, you know, aside from the writing itself, is the way it is organized like that. And it is, the one thing that's funny, it's the title of it's kind of weird because Crate Digger, because automatically you might think it's just about someone that collects records, and it's not about that at all.
That wasn't my title. That was the title the publisher came up with. The original title that I had for the book that I liked a lot better, and then they talked me into this one, was Recollections of My Record Collection. That's what I wanted to call
Oh,
it because I was writing
okay.
about a bunch of records that I just sold. It was like I collected punk records for 30 years and then I sold them all over a period of about 6 months. And as I was selling them, I was writing this book. So
Okay.
that's what I wanted to call it. And they said that we don't know if that title's going to do anything for anybody. And at the time, crate digger was kind of this buzzword that record collectors were using. And they said, let's call it this. And I had never heard the term before. And they're like, oh, it's a catchy term. People love it. And then, just a couple of days ago, I was driving past Waterloo Records here in Austin, and they had a sign out front that said crate digger sale. And it wasn't for my book. It was they're selling deep stock. So,
They were probably right though, from a marketing standpoint. Maybe they were right though, because I think it's
yeah, they were probably right.
they
I just
probably were.
I had never heard it until they threw it out at me, and I was just so happy they wanted to publish my book that I just said, yeah, okay.
All right, so
Yeah.
this so all this ties into what so Bob, yeah, basically I know this newest book came out, and I thought it looked really cool, and I know a lot of my friends were getting it and were into it. So I asked Bob to be on the show, and when I said, oh, you could do a mixtape if you want, or you could just pick a record, and you didn't, I felt like you had this cocked and loaded. You had this the well, not even album, the record you want to talk about, but obviously you just came right at me with this. So what is this? What is this that you said you want?
7 Seconds, Skins, Brains, and Guts 7-inch. It is the first 7 Seconds record, and I think it's the fourth or fifth punk record I ever owned. I got it very early on, very shortly after I got into punk rock. I mean, within months of discovering punk rock, this record was put in my hand. Not only is it the first 7 Seconds record, it's the first 7-inch record that I ever owned. And I remember a friend brought it to high school, and we were all looking at it. It was our lunch hour, so we were at a lunch table in school, and we couldn't play it, of course. We were just looking at it. And I just thought it was the coolest looking record, and I thought, wow, this looks awesome. I love the aesthetic of it. And then we went into the library, and there was a photocopy machine in the library that was a dime, and I just copied the whole record. I just copied the lyric sheet, and I copied the front cover and the back cover, and I just wanted to take them home. And my friend says, you could borrow the record too. So the friend let me borrow the record, and I taped it on a tape, and I brought it back to him the next day. And then I had the lyric sheet at home that I photocopied, and I was listening to the tape and reading the photocopy. And then a little while later, he lets me borrow the first Circle Jerks album. He lets me borrow a copy of Group Sex. I don't want to live. Yeah, I thought that record was really good, and I didn't bring it back for a couple of days, and he started freaking out. And he goes, hey, are you ever going to give me back that Circle Jerks album? And I was just teasing with him, but I said, oh no, you're not getting that back. And he said, oh, he's freaked out. He went, oh my God. He's like, please give me back the Circle Jerks record. It's the best record I own. If you give it back to me, I'll give you that 7 Seconds record. And I went, well, I don't know. I was just teasing him. And he goes, I'll throw in the first MDC album too. And I said, sure. So the next day, I brought back his Circle Jerks album. He gave me the first MDC album, Millions of Dead Cops. John Wayne was a Nazi. He liked to play SS. He had a picture, Adolf the Boy, tucked in his cowboy vest. And he gave me 7 Seconds, Walk Together, Rock Together. I got those two records for free just for returning a record to a friend. And so those became some of the earliest records in my record collection. I always think of those two records together. And for years, I had both of them on a cassette tape, 7 Seconds, then MDC. And I would just listen to that tape over and over again. So I very closely associate those two records in that strange way that I got them.
Because that was like kind of like your hardcore starter kit,
Yeah.
right?
That was, those were like maybe like the fifth and sixth records I ever purchased. I think the first records I got were Dead Kennedys, Fear, Circle Jerks, maybe DOA was number four, or Negative Trend. We Don't Play, We Riot. That was one of the first records I got. And then I think I got the MDC and the 7 Seconds in one day. And that was the first time I ever got two records at once. And that was amazing.
Right. All right. Well, first of all, the first thing about this, when you said 7-inch, or the Skins, Brains, and Guts 7-inch, at first I thought, oh, well, he doesn't understand. We don't just do singles. You know, I'm not going to talk a whole show about a single. And then I realized, oh, shit, there's 9 songs on this thing.
9 songs in 11 minutes. So, I mean, it was just the perfect aesthetic for me. Yeah. I mean, it was a black and white record cover. The lyrics are black and white. Oh, the music is I looked up some of the songs online yesterday to see what some of the chords are. Some of the songs actually have like 5 or 6 chords in them. Most of them are like 4 chord songs. And it's just got this ramshackle, spontaneous feel to it that really, it sounds like a new record every time I listen to it. And I probably listened to it 20 times yesterday because it's only 11 minutes long.
Yeah. Well, yeah, same with me. I've been listening to it nonstop. And it really just gets, the thing is, I think it is a perfect, like I said, distilled. It's like a perfectly distilled hardcore, whatever there was about the hardcore, which for me, hardcore, like, because like I said, I'm a little older than you. I was into punk. I you know, I was into Ramones and the Damned and Dead Kennedys and Misfits. But when the hardcore started coming out, it was different to me, and it was faster, you know, shorter songs. And maybe it was never something that I grabbed onto as much because it wasn't my first thing. Like, this is you know, you got this, and this is something you obviously love and still kept with you and still listen to now to this day because it was your first. And this wasn't my first, you know? So it was always like, yeah, something that was a little different that came after the punk that I listened to.
I understand a lot of the first wave punks, the 77 punks, the Clash punks, and Sex Pistols punks. When punk went hardcore, a lot of them just went, I'm out.
Right.
I'm done with this. I'm going to do something else.
I didn't do that because I was into Husker Du, you know, Land Speed Record. I still loved. So I was into it. I didn't do that. I wasn't out. But like I said, I guess I wasn't, you know, it didn't hold this place in my heart like it clearly does for you. So, yeah. All right, the one thing that I learned, because 7 Seconds, the one thing, I remember 7 Seconds, I remember them coming to, because they were a band that, like, toured, like, a lot, right?
Yeah.
They were from Reno, Nevada, formed in 1980, and I guess another thing I didn't realize, that the guys on this record were really just the original ones. There were two brothers, Kevin Seconds, and the other one called himself Steve Youth, right?
Steve Youth.
And then you had the other two brothers, the Borgino brothers, right?
That was early on. The Borgino brothers aren't on this record. The Borgino brothers are on one of the demos.
Oh, okay. But all right. But who is on the cover? Isn't that one of them?
The cover is one of the Borgino brothers. The cover is Dim Menace.
It is. Okay. All right. That's
his real name is
Jimmy. I think that's Borgino.
Jimmy Borgino.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at one time, he and Kevin shared vocal duties. Kevin played guitar and sang on some songs, and on some songs, Jimmy sang. Dim Menace sang.
Right.
And then by the time they got to Skins, Brains, and Guts, the two Borgino brothers, Jimmy and the guy who calls himself Tom Unist, they left to form Section 8, who had that song Fat, Drunk, and Stupid on the Maximum Rock and Roll complex. But yeah, the guy on the cover with the fist is the original co-singer of 7 Seconds, Dim Menace.
Okay. That made sense. Yeah. Because that's what I was confused. I was a little confused by that. Okay, so on this, we have the two brothers. We have Steve and Kevin, and then we have Bix Bigler, right, on drums?
Yeah. I can't find much information about Bix Bigler. I found different Bix Biglers online, and it's funny because... And that picture of him that's on the insert of the record, he looks like a 50-year-old man. And the other guys look like they're teenagers. You know, right. Kevin Seconds is like 20 or 21 on this record. I think Steve is about 15 on this record. And then they got Bix Bigler, who looks like a middle-aged man. He looks like Fred Mertz.
Well, he
from
was,
I Love Lucy.
Right. Yeah, the only thing I saw that he was in a band called the Thrusting Squirters, which I remembered hearing about, the Thrusting Squirters in Reno. They were another Reno band.
Thrusting Squirters are mentioned in the lyric sheet in 7 seconds. In the lower right-hand corner of the lyric sheet, they draw the 7 seconds logo, and they wrote all the names of all the Reno, Nevada punk bands around the logo. And one of them said Thrusting Squirters.
Oh, nice.
So my entire life I've been trying to find some Thrusting Squirters music with no luck.
Good luck.
A friend
yeah,
of mine
luck.
Says they had a tape. He says, I don't have it, but they had a tape.
Oh, man.
So Bix Bigler was also in a band called the Bix Bigler Band, which was basically the Skins, Brains, and Guts lineup of 7 seconds with Bix Bigler singing. And I don't know who else playing drums, but Steve and Kevin on guitar and bass. And it's a 4-song tape that I think Bix Bigler put out himself.
Nice.
And it's the songs are really funny and raunchy. It doesn't sound like something 7 seconds would be associated with. It sounds more like an Angry Samoans record.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. I like it.
Nice. All right. So let's get into this thing. Let's get in the opening, the title track. All these songs, you know, spoiler alert, these songs are all really short. So some of them I just play the whole song. Some of them I play clips, you know, whatever. It is what it is. But let's listen to the opening track, Skins, Brains, and Guts.
What the city's going to be? I can fight it, what's the city? You're in the mirror, baby. It's just a fucking skin, baby. Skin is. Brain cut. Skin is. Brain cut. Call me up the air, I've got the finger in the good one. Call it. Call me. And I'll never do the bait. Skin is. Brain cut. Skin is. Brain cut. Smash is down to this we do. No one thought of this with you. Take a moment, we ain't afraid. Angry kids, so here I stay. What this is, you're waiting. I'm the first one to see. It's about panic. It's just a fucking killing. Get in. Break it down. Get in. Break it down. Get in. Break it down. Get in. Break it down.
Yeah.
Great. Just fantastic. Just a call to arms.
Yes. It is. And right. And the one thing I always say, that the thing about hardcore is when you're, so you're, how old are you? You're like a teenager, right? Like how old are you?
I'm 55. I was 14 when I first heard this record.
You're 14. Okay. So as a 14-year-old kid, a certain 14-year-old kid, because some 14-year-old kids wouldn't, but if you're a certain 14-year-old kid, this, you hear this and immediately you go, oh my God, this is my jam. This is, you know, this is the most awesome thing ever. Right.
I heard that and I said, whatever these guys are part of, I want to be part of it too.
Right, right, exactly.
Yeah. Just the look of the record, they look cool sitting like on the insert. There's this black and white Xerox photo of them that's kind of almost solarized, and they just look cool as shit, and the lyrics are cool, and all the songs are like 45 seconds long, and it sounds like they're making them up on the spot. It sounds like they're playing them into a tape recorder. It's a really visceral record. It feels like you're watching a band practice when you listen to this. And part of the reason is because they leave all these little mistakes in between songs where like they'll start a song and then they'll stop and then they'll retake it. So there are all these little false starts and like sloppy endings on this record all throughout it. And I love those. I like the way they just make it feel like you're there.
Yeah, me too. Same. Yeah, I love stuff like that. And yeah, like you said, it is a call to arms. Walk the streets. You point at me. Yeah, hardcore pride is what you see. Your insults are a parody because you're so fucking scared of me. And it's great because there is that thing. I mean, that the guy on the cover of this thing is kind of scary, you know?
Yeah. I remember some of my friends who were even as early as 83 starting to already lean away from punk rock because they were starting to think that it was already getting too formulaic. I remember some of my friends listening to this record pointing it out that parody doesn't rhyme with scared of me. And I remember them ridiculing the line, call me dumb, I got a brain, and when I'm hurt, I feel the pain. for just being so simple and so you know, ABC, ABC, you know. But I love it. I love it. I mean, it's like I said, the record cover is black and white, and the lyrics are black and white too. It's
Oh,
like,
yeah.
this is good, that's bad. You're with us or you're against us. And I just kind of love that about hardcore.
Yeah, rolled. Yeah, it is. And that's also the other thing that would sort of draw you. You know, it isn't this like a poetry, like a Rush. You had all these like this poetry and stuff. Maybe you don't understand it all. It's like you understand whatever it is. You understand exactly what they're putting across, what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
There's no question. And you get this in the second track. Let's listen to a little bit of No Authority. All right, so right away, this is creeping in a theme that's going to be a lot of throughout 7 Seconds' career and through a lot of bands that I'm sure you love. Ain't a Commie, Fuck the Nazis, Belong to No One's Club. So Fuck the Nazis right there. So what, Bob, this is something that I wanted to ask you if you have any insight or if you have any, like, why do you think almost immediately when bands like this came out, this music, there was this, you know, skinhead culture, this like white pride, racist skinhead culture that got really big, and especially Florida, it was big. Why do you think, like, what happened where that came up the same, where this music was coming up at the same time?
I don't know. I don't know how it happened. I don't know why these people who obviously the bands hate them. I don't know why these troublemakers would still, they still show up at shows.
Right.
I was working a show months ago and it was the current version of Black Flag playing in Austin. And just like it was scripted, two Nazis show up and start messing around with people.
Really?
And the bouncers have to, in 2023, people have to throw Nazis out of a Black Flag show. Wow. Why are you here?
Yeah.
Why did you come in the first place? And 7 Seconds too, when I saw 7 Seconds, one of the times I saw them when I was still living in Florida, there was some Nazis there jumping around, hurting people. And 7 Seconds said, throw these guys out. Why did you come to our show?
Right.
We don't sing about, we sing about the exact opposite of the things you believe. Why are you here and giving us your money? You know?
Right.
So I don't know. I really don't know. And yeah, Miami did blow up with skinheads around 1986, and so did Tampa. I think a lot of the country blew up around 86. Some of what I understand about Tampa is that a lot of the original Tampa punks who got into punk in the late 70s, by the time it got to the mid 80s, a lot of them were older and became more conservative. And when the skinhead thing got to be a thing, that kind of took over in Tampa. I wasn't living in the Tampa area at that time,
right?
But that's what I have heard.
Yeah. It's just mystifying. It's mystifying to me, but it was a big thing. And so that's why, you know, bands like this would jump on that because they were so anti that and so against that. And so, and the thing is the music itself is so aggressive and hard hitting that it could play into if you were like Nazis and racist, it could play into that, but they were so, it was so counter to all that. And you know, good on them for, you know, as ham-fisted as some of it may seem, which we'll get up to that you know too, it's great. Obviously it's a great message, and also it's a message that still needs to be shouted today, obviously, right?
And, you know, at this era of 7 Seconds' career, those guys consider themselves skinheads without the racist connotation.
Right,
I mean, it's right in
right.
the title of the album. And you can really hear the UK influence on a lot of these songs, especially the last song, We're Gonna Fight, sounds like it could be a Sham 69 song.
Yeah, but that's right. I was going to say that.
Yeah, the two brothers, Steve and Kevin, those guys were big fans of stuff like Sham 69, Cockney Rejects, Angelic Upstarts. Even on the first 7 Seconds album, The Crew, the very first song on that, Here's Your Warning, that's a nod to angelic upstarts have a song called Teenage Warning, and there's a lyric in that song that uses the word teenage, a teenage warning. So, I mean, it's a direct reference to the Brit skinhead punk stuff, right. Street punk stuff.
Yeah. And so like I said, they're, that's definitely through all of this here, and they're hitting it hard here. And this next song is to a little bit of Redneck Society.
They want to stay my face. Play more racism. Nothing in between. They just don't understand the way. They just don't understand the state. The power's in the White House and the more majority. Majority. Majority.
It's funny, I can't help reading like these lyrics. Now reminded rednecks, such lame mentality. Believe in old time standards like guns and bigotry. It's so funny how that's still so so true today, you know.
Just this song, it could have been a 2024 song, you know.
Right.
It's still sadly relevant.
Sadly relevant. Yeah, that's yeah. It exactly. And at the beginning, these songs, you could hear what you said, like you hear them counting in, and you know these songs sound like this is their take. This is the one they didn't do like a whole bunch of takes of these songs.
Yeah, you didn't play the end of that song, but at the very end of Redneck Society, there's like a bunch of screeching and feedback, and the band kind of stumbles to a stop, and then you hear Kevin Second say, okay we'll keep it.
Yeah, that's right. I'll have that. I'll put that in there. That's
it's
actually
like, yeah,
brilliant.
That was for that stage. Yeah, keep it. Of course, I agree with you. But it's just really in your face. It's just, you get the feeling that they're just knocking them out one after another in the studio, and you just feel like they're playing right in front of you.
Right.
It's
yeah,
great.
Exactly. Which is great. All right. So this next one, Baby Games, I feel like I'm going to ask you, let's listen to it. And then I'm going to ask you, I feel like he's calling someone out or calling, certain people out, but we'll talk about it. Let's do a little bit of Baby Games. Yeah, that's great. So what I see is like a band, which this is amazing because this is like brand, this is like they're, you know, one of the first things they're putting out. They're brand new, but they're already kind of getting tired. They like want to take this seriously, and they want people to take this serious. Like, this is serious.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if there was a specific incident where they're calling a specific person out. I don't know, but they do mention in the very beginning, one of the first lyrics, they say Romper Room, which is a reference to an old kids TV show.
I used to watch
from the 70s. Room, I don't know anybody who remembers Romper Room.
Well, I do. All right. I'm old enough to remember. Okay.
They do mention Romper Room right in the beginning of that, which I think is cool. And I bet that goes by a lot of people younger than us who listen to that song. But yeah I don't know what I made notes for all the songs, the talking points, but I didn't have many notes for that song besides Romper Room. But I don't know. I guess it's by 2 years after this record, after 2 years after Skin's Brains and Guts, on their first album, The Crew, they have a song where they're again addressing naysayers. And the lyric goes, "You say some years ago our songs were fine, and our debut EP was just divine." And they're talking about, this is like just 2 years after this record.
Oh, right.
They're getting shit for I don't know, whatever, playing their music too good, being too popular.
Right.
I don't know. But they revisit this Baby Games theme in 1984 as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I'm assuming you stayed a Seven Seconds fan. I'm assuming that throughout their career, right? Because they're still, I mean, they put out tons of stuff.
They did put out tons of stuff, and I followed them a little longer than I should have. I bought two 7 Seconds records back to back that I didn't like, and then I was like, all right, I'm done with them.
Right.
But I was with them. I loved every song all the way through Walk Together, Rock Together, which was 1985. It's not the way we look at us as a style of hat. We'll get the most of areas, take it out like you wear. Just move a little on with different hearts and different minds. If we listen to more, what can we let in the same line? We can walk together, why can't we rock together? In 1986, they did a divisive record called New Wind that had two different recording sessions. It had one lineup on one side, another lineup on the other side. One side was recorded in Washington, D.C. by Ian MacKaye, and the other side was recorded, I want to say it was recorded in Sacramento, but I might be wrong about that. But very weird record because it's got two different lineups, two very different recordings, and some of the songs are kind of fast and recognizable as 7 seconds, and some of the songs are kind of... the guitar gets a little jangly and the vocals get kind of whoa, and it sounds like they're leaning towards REM or something. Yeah. But still, I revisited that record not long ago and I was like, okay, I like this more than I used to like it.
Right.
But it's not my favorite 7 seconds record.
Yeah.
And then they did a 12-inch EP called Praise that they recorded on a couple days off. They were on tour in, I think, 86 or 87. And they were in Minneapolis, and they had a few days off in Minneapolis. So they ran into a studio, and they recorded a 4-song 12-inch called Praise. And the band even hates that record. But if you listen to it, it sounds like U2 demos.
Oh,
it sounds like it sounds like Unforgettable Fire era U2 demos. And if you look at the pictures of the band on that record, Kevin Seconds is wearing like a Bono hat.
He was trying.
Like a black Bono hat. Going, and yeah. I was like, I don't know what they're doing on this record. I'm not going to listen to it that often. And then they did a record called Ourselves. And when Ourselves came out, it had a sticker on it, a promo sticker on the front cover. They were on Enigma Records. They got signed to a fairly big indie label. And there was a green promo sticker on the cover that said 7 seconds, walking and rocking on the straight edge. And 7 seconds really hated that promo sticker. They were very vocal about how much they hated that promo sticker.
Yeah, that sounds really bad.
On the back cover of the record, there's pictures of them and their hair is longer and they're wearing like what we would call alternative clothing or college rock clothing. The way they weren't dressed like punks anymore. They're dressed like REM fans on the back of this record.
Oh, wow.
And the review in Maximum Rock and Roll by Tim Yohannan goes, the record's called Ourselves. So Tim Yohannan goes, if this is Ourselves, why do they look like Die Kreuzen and sound like U2? It's just like, okay. So that record, I found a couple of songs I kind of liked on it. And then after Ourselves, they did an album called Soul Force Revolution, and I never got through the first side of it. I just never got through it. I got like 3/4 of the way through side one. I never heard side two. In 1993, I started a band called Failure Face with a couple of younger people, and the guy who was going to play guitar said, what do you want Failure Face to sound like? I said, I want Failure Face to sound like 7 seconds. And he picked up his guitar and he started going jing-a-jing-a-jing-a-jing-a-jing-a-jing-a-jing-a-jing-a-jing-a-jing. And I go, what the fuck is that? He goes, 7 seconds. I go, what fucking 7 seconds song goes jinga 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 jing jing jinga jing? He goes, oh, it's on Soul Force Revolution. It's the first song on side two. And I said, I never got to side two. I said, let me play some good 7 seconds for you. And I played him The Crew, and he was blown away. He goes, whoa, 7 seconds used to sound like Minor Threat.
Right.
And I went, yes, they yes. did. Yeah, they sounded like Minor Threat. He's like, this stuff is awesome. But he heard the college rocky 7 seconds first. And that's how he identifies with 7 seconds. And that's where I gave up on 7 seconds, was halfway through side one of Soul Force Revolution. And I didn't hear anything after that, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, fair enough. There was a time. Do you remember? There was a time when I remember TSOL and some bands would put out a record, and you could tell just by their pictures, their promo pictures, they were trying to go to grab onto something that really, you know, that wasn't really their thing, but they were trying, you know. But
figure by 1986, bands like the Circle Jerks and 7 Seconds and Black Flag and Dead Kennedys have been doing it a long time. And they probably got bored and they probably wanted to branch out a little bit. And I'm a little easier on some of those 1986 punk records now.
Right.
If
right,
you
right.
talk to punk rockers about 1986. They go, bad year.
Yeah.
But I'm a little easier on some of those 1986 punk records now, because with the context of, well, it's 6 years of the Circle Jerks. It's their fifth album. What else are they going to do?
Exactly.
All right. That record's not as bad as I thought. But, you know, it was, they were run, all the original, the first wave hardcores, they either ran out of steam in 86 or they changed directions. Like Corrosion Conformity went really metal.
Yeah,
and
yeah, right.
Gnostic
right.
Front went really metal.
Right.
DRI went super metal.
Yeah.
And then 7 Seconds decided to go the other way. They decided to play college rock.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, I probably would have preferred them to go metal than college rock, as much as I don't like metal. I would have rather have heard a metal 7 Seconds record than a college rock 7 Seconds record in 1986. But
all right, that's fair.
Anyhow,
that's fair.
I love 7 Seconds. I'm not dumping on them.
No,
I'm just saying,
of course,
that I have a hard cutoff line with their discography.
Yeah, that's fine. But there's no fine line on this next one, because they're telling you exactly what they feel. Let's listen to Racism Sucks.
Ignorance is your attitude. You wallow in your racist stupor. Have you really got to think? Do you believe in the KKK? Do you think white power rules the day? Would you like to shoot a white man dead? Would you like to bust a black man's head away? In England there's a national front. It's strong but they're fucking cunt. Hitler as a figurehead, he liberates Hitler as he lies dead. They think that's so bloody tough. Fucking fashion ain't enough. Martin Webster like the KKK. That's how it flies in some fucking way. Racism sucks. 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 Racism fucking sucks.
So what do you think they're trying to say here, Bob?
I have a lot of things to say about this song. First of all, I had to hear Racism Sucks from Kevin Seconds. It never occurred to me before that racism sucks, because I was 14 years old. I was growing up in South Florida in a small town, and it's almost 100% white. And you grow up hearing people around you throwing around all kinds of slurs.
Right, right.
And you grow up hearing it your entire life and just kind of believe that stuff is true. And then all of a sudden, Kevin Seconds comes along and he tells you that there's another way to think, and the what you've been taught all your life is bullshit. And I'm not kidding when I say that this is the first time in my life it occurred to me that racism sucks. And thanks, Kevin Seconds. I mean, this is one of those moments where music led me down a different path. You know, who
That's
knows
great.
Where I would have been if I hadn't heard this 7 Seconds record. I might still be living in Stewart, and you know, I might be a total redneck. But yeah, this is probably the best song on the record as far as songwriting goes. It's a really catchy song.
I think so. This
it's
one
cool,
and
cool changes,
and the last
cool
song,
guitar
yeah.
solo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it uses the N-word in the song. I mean, it doesn't use the N-word in a way that supports the N-word.
No, no.
It uses it to tell you the N-word is wrong. But because the N-word is used in the song, I'm sure a lot of people aren't going to want to put it on their playlist. It's probably not going to get played on too many radio stations, but it's a real strong use of the N-word, just like the Dead Kennedys used it in Holiday in Cambodia, and MDC used it in their song America's So Straight. You know, it's a powerful word that I can't throw around anymore. I don't know if 7 Seconds plays this song live anymore. I don't know what they say there. I don't know if they say that word.
Right. But that's
yeah.
great. That's very powerful that you say that, because I was wondering that. The thing I was going to ask you is, do you think these actually change people's minds maybe, or got and you're showing, well, maybe not change your mind, but
yeah.
but sort of enlighten you. And that's great.
For sure.
I mean, that's awesome.
It was an eye opener.
Right.
When my family moved to Stewart, Florida, and first my family moved to Naples, Florida. My family moved to Naples in 77 or 78.
Oh, wow.
We moved there from
there
Connecticut.
There must have been nothing there.
There was not much in Naples in 77 or 78, but we moved there in 77 or 78. And I grew up, I was born in Connecticut. Me and my two sisters and my mom and dad, we were all from Connecticut. And we moved to Florida for my dad's work. And before we moved to Florida, my mom told us about the Ku Klux Klan. She says, there's this group called the Ku Klux Klan, and they look like this, and this is what they believe. So when we moved to Florida, if anybody asks you if you're Catholic, just say, I don't know. I was like, why? She's like, because the Ku Klux Klan doesn't like Catholics. And that blew my mind. I thought, because I lived in Connecticut and literally every person I knew, except for this Asian boy named Jack, everybody I knew was Catholic. I didn't know there were, I didn't know there was another religion besides Catholic. And then my mom tells me, it's like, okay, we're in good Florida, and a lot of people down there don't like Catholics. So if anybody asks you if you're Catholic, just say, I don't know. I don't know what I am. So that was a total mind blower. And then when my family moved to Stuart, Florida, in the summer of 1979, there was a sign on the main road going through town, US 1, US Highway 1 goes all the way to from Key West to Maine. But going through Stuart, Florida, there used to be a sign on US 1 that had the Ku Klux Klan logo on it and had an arrow pointing that way to the Ku Klux Klan clubhouse. There was a Ku Klux Klan headquarters in Stuart when my family moved there in 79. Now it doesn't exist anymore. The building has been torn down, and now it's some really crappy apartments. But I mean, racism was really prevalent in Florida in the 70s and 80s. You're from Florida, you know that.
Oh yeah, it
Oh,
was.
geez.
Yep, it's true.
Yeah. Another thing that I want to talk about from this song. I have a lot of things I want to talk about in this song. Another thing that came up in this is Kevin Second says hacky bashing. That was something that I didn't know what that was. I didn't know what that meant. It took me a long time to figure out that it meant people in England beating up Pakistani immigrants.
Yes,
I didn't realize.
which is a big
I
thing
didn't know
there. They
that was
were
a
very
thing.
racist against
Yeah.
Pakistanis
I
there.
didn't know that was a thing. There's also two other things in this song that I want to point out. There's a lot to unpack in Racism Sucks.
There
One
is,
of
there
them,
is.
one of them for like a 41-second song, there's a lot we can discuss. There's a line in this song. And a couple of years ago, maybe a year and a half ago, I worked a two-night stand at the music club I work with 7 Seconds. We had the Circle Jerk 7 Seconds and Negative Approach 2 nights in a row at the club. Three of my favorite bands of all time. And all of a sudden, all the questions I wanted to ask these guys just went out of my head. And one of the questions I want to ask Kevin Seconds about is a lyric in this song, Racism Sucks. There's a line that Kevin Seconds sings in first person point of view. He says, a lot of us blacks feel just the same. Kevin Seconds isn't black.
No.
I've seen him a bunch of times. He's not black. He caused a lot of confusion with that lyric by him singing from the point of view of as a black person. He could have just said a lot of blacks feel just the same, but he said us. A lot of us blacks feel just the same. Kevin Seconds is not black. I've seen him.
No. Yeah, that's interesting, fascinating.
So I wanted to bring that up with Kevin, and I just didn't have the heart to bring it up to him because he's probably been asked about it about 100 times. Kevin, you're not black, are you?
It's probably for the best.
And there's a great line at the end, towards the end of the song. It's one of the last lines of the song where he says, "Kill, kill Ronnie Reagan," and it's just great. I just think it's one of the best hardcore lyrics of all time.
Yeah, destroy. Well, it's
Yeah.
great. And you were talking about their love of the British bands, and they do mention the National Front, and they call out
The National Front,
Martin
Martin
Webster
Webster.
too. Yeah, who was a British
Yeah.
like neo-Nazi.
This song has a real British punk feel to it too.
Yes, for sure, for sure.
The chords and the chorus, the big shout along chorus. It really feels like it could almost be a Sham 69 song.
Oh yeah, for
Yeah.
sure. Which I'm a big Sham 69 fan too.
And on one of their records, on a record, they were supposed to, their first album was supposed to be called, I believe it was supposed to be called United Front. They were supposed to put out after the 7-inch. They recorded a bunch of songs that were going to become an album on Alternative Tentacles, and the album got canceled. But one of the songs on that album was a Sham 69 cover, and it didn't come out until a couple years later. Somebody put the song on a 7-inch EP called Blast from the Past. If you buy the Blast from the Past 7-inch, it has a cover of If the Kids Are United on it. That's really speeded up quite a bit. It's a really strong cover.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's a nice song.
All right, so we got the side one of the 7-inch. We had 5 songs already, and now we flip over.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
We flip it over, and now we get the first song on side two. Let's just do a little bit of This Is My Life.
Civilized society, you wanna take control of me. Parents wanna run my life, some girls act like my fucking wife. Do you good, step two. Come on, get over here, you tell me what to do. Do what to say, not the fucking thing I would like. This is just my life, this is my life.
This is one song. Once in a while, you'll get something where you realize that they're young. These are still kind of young guys, because when they're talking about parents want to run my life, some girls act like my fucking wife.
Kevin, I think, was 21 when this record came out, and Steve was just 15. When I met Steve the very first time, I saw 7 Seconds. I saw them in West Palm Beach at a place called Respectable Street Cafe.
Oh, nice.
And
nice.
Respectables are still open.
Yes, they
and,
are.
I met Steve outside of the club that night, and we started talking. He was very friendly, and I think he had just turned 21, and I was not 21 yet. And Steve was drinking, and I was surprised that the guy in 7 Seconds was drinking alcohol. But he's like, I'm not straight edge. I've never been straight edge. And I said, oh. And then we went in the bar, and he just goes to the bartender. He's like, this is my friend Bob. Just give him whatever he wants. And I wasn't even of legal drinking age, but that night I drank a bunch of beer with 7 Seconds.
Nice.
And it was a great show. And Steve and I were talking on the sidewalk, and I realized that he was just 2 years older than me.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, this guy has already made like so many good records, and he's already toured the country so many times, and he's only 2 years older than me. I mean, he really was one of my peers. And then last year when they played at the Mohawk here in Austin, and Steve goes, he goes, you look kind of like me, but you're much more handsome. So I thought that was kind of funny. Some woman was in the dressing room who thought that I was Steve. After the show, she was in the dressing room. She goes, you were great tonight. I'm like, thank you. She goes, you're really my friend out there. I was like, yeah. She goes, you're a great bass player. I was like, I don't play bass. And she goes, aren't you? And I was like, no. And then me and Steve had a good laugh about that.
That's great. Yeah. So another thing we didn't say, this, I mean, just you got started on the road. You were inspired. You played in tons of bands, right? And you started your own label eventually. And so your whole life's trajectory, you could say, was changed by this kind of music coming into your life.
Couple of records, a couple of tapes, and it was like, there's no way I'm going to be an accountant, you know?
Right.
It's like, but you know, at that point, I was like, I'm going to go to college and I'll get some office job, but my heart wasn't into it.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
I just figured I bet it's what I have to do. But when I got out of college, I figured out, maybe I don't have to wear a suit and tie. You know, I never liked that.
Right. All right, so we get, again, you mentioned the Clan, and now we have, it's pretty, once again, we're not pulling any punches. Let's listen to Anti-Clan. It's a simple message, but it's a really good message. And especially, for singing it for impressionable youngsters like someone like you, I don't want a fucking race war. I don't want no segregated schools. I want to have the right to choose my friends. I mean, that's great. It's a great message.
Yeah. You know, this is a good point to point out. I don't know if you're aware of this, but in 1994, Thurston Moore, Mike Watt, Dez Kadena, and a guy named Dave Markey, who was the drummer in Sin 34, four of them got together to lampoon this entire record, and they formed a group called Society's Ills, and they covered this song, they covered this album, all 9 songs.
Really?
They even used the same artwork and the same lyric sheet and everything. So it's Thurston Moore on vocals, Mike Watt on bass, Dez Kadena on guitar, Dave Markey on drums, and they cover all of these songs, and they lampoon the cover. And the way they play the songs is, it's like you could kind of tell that they have some affection for this, but they're also poking a little bit of fun at how simplistic the lyrics are shambolic the music is. And if you listen to their version of Anti-Clan, it's really apparent at the end of the song, the way their voices break on the Society Souls version, that they're kind of it's really tongue-in-cheek. It's like, oh, we love this record, but, you know, you gotta listen. Find Society's Ills. I'm sure you could find it on YouTube.
I will. Oh my God, I'm going to download it. That sounds amazing.
But you know what? Those guys, you think about the musicians, Thurston Moore, Mike Watt, Des Kadena, Dave Markey, very accomplished musicians by 1994. And Kevin Seconds and Steve Youth recorded this, you know, a dozen years earlier. And Kevin and Steve blow them out of the water. They play these songs so much better than Thurston Moore, Mike Watt, Des Kadena, and Dave Markey. I know those guys are doing a lampoon, but the 7 seconds version just destroys the Society Ills version of these songs.
Yeah, that's one thing I wanted to mention and point out is that even as raw and visceral as this is, it's really well played and it's really great. I mean, these guys were on fire, intense, but this is not flailing around people that don't know how to play their instruments. This is not that at all.
There's a really cool video that Kevin Seconds released a while ago. He did this at a library or something in Reno, where he showed this short film and then he answered questions. And the short film is 7 seconds packing up a car and driving down from Reno to San Francisco to play their first out of town show. And they're all really young. Steve Youth is probably like 14 or 15 years old. And it's so cute. It's them packing all their stuff into a station wagon. And they're all smiling and they're all excited because they're going on this road trip. And they pull into San Francisco. And there's this footage of Steve Youth walking around the street, kind of window shopping. And he's smiling like he's in heaven. And then it shows him play the show. And the show is amazing. And they restored the sound. They restored the video a little bit. And Kevin Seconds showed this video at some library in San Francisco, in Reno. And then afterwards, he answered questions about the band. It was a really cool thing. And I messaged him. I said, you need to take that on the road. You need to travel around the country showing this short film and answering questions about 7 seconds. Because a lot of people really love that band. You know,
that's great. Yeah.
I think you can find that on YouTube.
Nice. Well, you could find pretty much anything on YouTube, I think. So.
Yeah, you sure can. At this point. You sure can. Great.
All right. So as much as they hate racists and they hate the Klan, there's one other thing that they hate that they had to throw in here.
I hate sports.
Yeah.
So do I.
That's it.
So do I. This is my theme song. There was a fanzine from San Francisco. It was about strange disasters and murders and mysteries. And they did a whole issue called the I Hate Sports issue. And it was all about people who got killed and injured playing sports. And they took the title of their issue from the 7 Seconds song.
All right, let's listen to it. The best line in this song, Howard Cosell is a wimp. Let's listen to I Hate Sports.
I hate football games. Fucking way! TV sports, they all suck shit! Yeah, I was a little whip! I hate sports! Fucking little fucking way! Calling in his old HP! Yeah, he's a whip, he's fucking tame! I hate sports! Hey, man!
So they mentioned they got football, baseball, boxing. I love the fact that they, I feel like they couldn't think of any more sports. They mentioned baseball twice.
I never caught that. I did catch that. I did catch that they called Muhammad Ali a wimp. And that's hilarious.
I know. But, I
remember when Muhammad Ali died, Kevin Seconds posted some kind of tribute to Muhammad Ali online. And I said something like, but I thought you didn't like Muhammad Ali. Exactly. He said, what are you talking about? And I said, you wrote a song that says, Ali and his old age fame, he's a wimp, he's fucking tame. He said, did I really write that? And I said, He didn't. He forgot that he wrote to his lyrics, and then we had a laugh out loud over that one.
All right. Yeah, he was young. All right. Yeah, you can't. There's no need to.
I also like that song ends with just a random "Hey man."
Yeah.
Hey man.
Right. All right. So now we get the final song, which this is, I feel like this song, this is a great, We're Gonna Fight is another, much like the opening song, it's kind of like a call to arms. And I feel like it also aims you towards where they're heading a little as far as their music, because their music isn't all exactly like this record, you know, moving forward. And, you know, you could hear that in this song here, I feel like. Let's listen to a little bit of We're Gonna Fight. So the final, you know, you get the final message of hardcore. We're going to fight the narrow minds, make our own rules, live your life, and I'll live mine, right? That's it.
It's one of the best songs on the record, and I think it might be the only one from this era that they still play live.
Oh, okay.
They still do
okay.
It.
That makes sense.
I remember when I was in a band called Flaming Midget that didn't last very long. Flaming Midget had a very short career. But anyhow, I remember when I was in Flaming Midget, we had 8 original songs, and we wanted to do a cover song, and I wanted to do this. I wanted to do We're Gonna Fight. But there are 2 different versions of this song. There's the version that's on this record that we just heard, and then there's a different version that comes as a bonus track on the UK pressing of Walk Together, Rock Together. So we were at band practice, and I said, let's learn this song for next practice. So I was playing bass, and I went home, and I learned it off the record. And the guitar player went home, and he learned it off the other record.
Oh.
And when we showed up, we were playing different chords. And we realized that 7 Seconds played different chords on the 2 records. Oh, and then we argued about which version are we going to do. And I said, well, let's do the original version that's on Skins, Brains, and Guts. And that's what we ended up doing.
Okay, nice.
But yeah, I like this song. And you could really hear the Britpunk Sham 69 influence on it.
For sure.
And yeah, they still rock this one out live. They played it 2 nights in a row when I saw them in 2023.
Oh, nice. That's great. And I'm assuming you've seen Kevin Seconds. He does a solo show sometimes. Have you ever seen him do that?
I have never seen one of his solo shows.
Oh, okay.
But I will if he ever comes around again. And I've suggested to him that he takes that short film of his 7 Seconds, goes to San Francisco on the road, because it's like about 11 minutes of the earliest live footage of 7 Seconds. And it's if you're a fan of the band, it's really something to see.
Because
they do
great.
Some songs that are from the first record. They do some songs that aren't on anything else. It's amazing.
Right. All right, Bob. So this was great. I was really glad. I said I have to get this guy Bob Surin on. And all right, so the latest book, it's called Weird Music That Goes On Forever: A Punk's Guide to Loving Jazz. It's really great. I recommend it. The best place is for them to just go to microcosmpublishing.com.
Yes, there's a lot of stuff in there about 7 Seconds. How does 7 Seconds fit in with jazz? You'll have to read the book to find out.
Yes, and you could also get Crate Digger and Obsession with Punk Records is there as well. And I recommend. Oh, I wanted to mention also real quick the illustrations on there. It's by
the illustrations are by Brian Walsby.
Brian Walsby,
who
that's
has it. 7 Seconds connection. Brian Walsby, when he was a teenager in Simi Valley, California, he drew a cartoon that he sent to 7 Seconds that they ended up using on the inside of their first album, The Crew. And then the next year, he drew another cartoon that they ended up using on the front cover of Walk Together, Rock Together. That's a picture of a cartoon version of 7 Seconds rocking out and a cartoon punk audience in front of them going crazy. So when we did this record, when we did this book, I said, I want Brian Walsby to illustrate it. And when I told him what I wanted for the cover, I said, I want to do a jazz version of Walk Together, Rock Together for the cover. So if you take the 7 Seconds record, Walk Together, Rock Together, and you put it side by side with my book, you can see the similarities. That was the concept. Great. This is the updated jazz version of Walk Together, Rock Together. It looks very similar to that album, and I hope some people pick up on that.
That's great. Yeah, so I definitely recommend everyone picking it up. So you have any plans for another book? You have any ideas down the line?
I don't. You know, it took me 9 years to come up with an idea to follow up Crate right. Digger. The publisher pitched a couple of ideas to me that I didn't like. Okay. And I pitched a novel to them that they didn't like. And then I revisited that novel. I said, yeesh, maybe it's a good idea. This novel didn't come out.
Okay.
And then I was in Austin and I went to a jazz club in Austin. And I walked into the jazz club and there was nobody at the door. There was no bartender. There was no doorman at the door. So I just walked into the club. And as soon as I walked in, I had to go to the bathroom. So I walked in, I went straight to the bathroom and I relieved myself in the bathroom. Then I walked out and I sat down somewhere and immediately a bouncer was on me. He was like, how'd you get in here? I was like, I just walked in. There was nobody at the door. And he goes, oh, well, did you make a reservation? And I said, no, I didn't make a reservation. It's a jazz club. I just walked in. He goes, you need to make a reservation to be here. I said, oh, really? And then I knew the owner of the club's name, so I dropped his name. And he goes, oh, you know the owner, huh? Because I guess you can hang out for a little bit over there in the dark, you know, away from the pretty people. That kind of thing. I was treated like a third class citizen in a jazz club. And I thought, this is really weird. You know, jazz isn't supposed to be elitist, just like punk rock isn't supposed to be elitist.
Right.
It's supposed to be all welcoming and it's supposed to be cool. You know, when I got into punk rock, people were like, come to the show. Here's a flyer. Right. Here's a mixtape. Here's a zine you can borrow. And when I go to this jazz club as kind of a jazz newbie, I get, what are you doing here? So that pissed me off. And I drove home with my mind burning, thinking about all the ways that punk rock and jazz relate to each other and how people should be welcomed to jazz just like I was welcomed to punk rock. And I went home that night and I wrote the first 1,000 words that night. And I sent them to my publisher like at 3 o'clock in the morning. And he got back to me like 4 hours later. And he's like, this is a good idea. Let's go with this.
Nice.
So this book was inspired by an unsatisfactory experience at a jazz club in Austin, Texas.
That's great. All right. Well, yeah, once again, I would recommend going to microcosmpublishing.com and checking out, picking up the books. If you want to follow us, Instagram and Facebook, it's at That Record Got Me High. On X, it's at TRGMH Podcast. You can email me at trgmh33@gmail.com. Sorry, I had a long drive home. Don't forget, most importantly, if you want to become a patron of the show, go to patreon.com/trgmh. Become a patron of the show. Bob, this was really great.
Thanks a lot. Very good interview. My first publicity for this new book.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
yeah, so I appreciate it.
All right. First of many. And yeah, thanks for coming on. Definitely would like to have you on again. And thanks everyone for listening. Until next time, I'm Rob Elba. We'll see you in the jazz club.
99 dreams I have had. Everyone, a red balloon. It's all over and I'm standing pretty. In this dust that was a city. I can find a souvenir just to prove the war was here. And here is a red balloon. I think of you.